Hey, just a reminder that friend of the show and sketch card artist Ben Abusada is giving Rebel Base Card listeners 20% off sketch cards in his Etsy store. If you go to etsy.com/shop/KSGeekman and use the code Rebel Base Card, you'll get 20% off of sketch cards. You can find the link in the show notes. All right, let's do the show.
This is Norrin Rad.
And I'm Ian Taylor of the Marvel Card Collectors Podcast.
And you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
Great pull, kid.
It's fun to be a fan. It's fun to find other fans. And there's a lot you can do just by, you know, a kind remark, a retweet, showing up in a feed, enjoying it, and passing it along.
You found something.
You found the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
What a piece of junk.
I'm your host, Greg McLaughlin.
As clumsy as he is stupid.
Join me as we discuss Star Wars trading cards and card collecting.
We need a statement, not a manifesto.
We'll talk about sets from the original vintage.
No, the one I'm pointing to.
All the way to current releases.
This?
Yes.
All right, let's get started.
Commence primary ignition.
Welcome back, or if this is your first episode, welcome aboard. My name is Greg McLaughlin, and this is the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Good show for you tonight, as my guest is a conversation with two awesome members of the Star Wars community who I can always count on for good trades, Star Wars content, and positive vibes. Frank Mulder and David Nicely come on the program to talk about their introduction to Star Wars, coming to Celebration Chicago, and their experiences with Card Trader. Simply, it's just a good group Star Wars chat that was a lot of fun. And I got a lot out of it, and I really hope you do as well. We'll get to that conversation here in a few minutes, but I wanted to start off with this. Since this conversation was recorded prior to the events in Minneapolis and the subsequent events that followed across the nation, Card Squadron, for which this podcast title got its name, was a hashtag I started a little while back, not long after the self-quarantine began, as a way not only to check in on my fellow card folks on Twitter to see if they were all right, but to help promote the hobby. And given we've seen some terrible things recently, I think it underscores the need for us to work more to connect with one another and be a positive force out there, not just in the Star Wars community, but our own communities as well. And I know you don't tune into this podcast for biting political talk and analysis on current events. And I'm not going to preach to you from on high just because I happen to have a microphone. But what I would hope that what you got out of the things that happened is that this is a point in time that I think that we are all tasked to take a good long look at ourselves and decide who we want to be going forward. Myself, I want to be a better person. And I want to be a part of the conversation that's out there. And if that means I need to listen, I need to bone up on some knowledge, or get a little learning, as my old man used to say, I'm up for it. And if it means I have to do more, I'm in. Maybe I don't know what that entails yet, but I'm open, and I'm listening. And I would hardly think that there's anyone out there who couldn't get on board with that. As always, I appreciate you listening, and I hope you continue to find this content appealing, informative, and entertaining, I hope, and I'll keep working to make this better. Thank you. I appreciate you giving me a minute there. Speaking of which, let's get to a little homestead keeping.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
So, given the fact that during the pandemic, you know, a lot of things in the supply and production pipeline have kind of gone amok, is that we've had some slipping and changing release dates for the top Star Wars cards out there. And I kind of wanted to kind of give you sort of an updated set of dates and releases as far as this moment in time, based on what I'm seeing, not only from Cardboard Connection, but also from Blowout when they're talking about some of the pre-orders. We were supposed to get the Rise of Skywalker Series 2. That should have come out in April, but now it's kind of slipped to June 24th, at least as far as this podcast is concerned, as well. And that was about the same time as we were going to have the top Star Wars authentic autographs, these 8x10s. One that was supposed to come out in June, and I am seeing some stars align as far as dates, is that Topps Chrome Perspectives Resistance versus the First Order. As of this moment, it looks like it's hitting around August 5th, which is nice because then we wouldn't necessarily have a lot of things butting up against each other, you know, in case you're wanting to get some of the hobby boxes. I know that Rise of Skywalker Series 2 most likely will be a retail and hobby, but it could just maybe hobby only. One nice thing of note is that some of the stores are starting to open up. And so if you've kind of been waiting to kind of give them some business, I know some have been kind of doing some online. Check to see if your local hobby store is open, if they are taking orders for, or if they're getting in, or if they plan to getting in stock. Sometimes they will put in orders if you ask them to. So like I said, Rise of Skywalker Series 2, these Series 2s are kind of a favorite of mine because they tend to have more of the movie scenes in them. And I was definitely looking to pick up a box or two of those as this is the last of the Skywalker series. And so this would be a nice bookend to not only the 9 films, but this particular card set. I do like the fact that it's a little separated from the Chrome Perspectives, if that happens to fall that way. Chrome Perspectives will be a little nicer, higher-end card. It's not something I'm necessarily chasing, but I will check it out, and who knows? You know, I pretty much will buy anything that isn't nailed down. So I don't expect me not at some point to get these in hand, but it is nice. I don't necessarily have to choose one over the other, and I can kind of maybe, you know, rearm up the wallet in between once I kind of get the Rise of Skywalker Series 2 stuff out of me. Right now, the Topps Holocron series is slated for September 9th. And one big bit of news we did hear last week, and it was nice, I think, thanks to Blowout for giving us a bit of a tip, that it does look like that the Mandalorian Season 1 is going to, cards are going to drop in November. So that means it looks like it'll probably start either right after the show, Mandalorian Season 2 begins, or we may see the Mandalorian Season 2 in November. Also, I do expect Topps now to probably put out the Mandalorian Season 2 cards much like they did last year, where they did a few cards after every episode. So start saving your pennies now. I know I will. It's this Mandalorian season series is one that I'm excited about. I've been talking about forever, and can't wait to see these cards. They'll have sketch cards, there'll be all kinds of good stuff in them. So fingers crossed it's going to be a good selection, and boy, you know, by the fall and winter, you know, hopefully we're in a much better place all the way around. But I did just kind of want to take a few moments to talk about some of these releases. I know it's kind of been nice as we kind of been in a lull of releases, and that's kind of allowed me to, you know, do a little eBay and here and there, kind of tidy up the collection a little bit, you know, work on some loose ends, and that's always a good thing to do in between major card releases. Once there's a card release out there, all eyes are on the release as we start putting the sets together, getting the checklist out there. I may do another Excel spreadsheet for it. I did one for Women of Star Wars, and I really liked that. It kind of helped me kind of keep pace for not only what I was accumulating, but what I was trading off and what my needs were. So anyway, but as we finish with that, let's get back to our conversation with David and Frank on Card Squadron.
Stay on target.
We're too close.
Stay on target.
One of the things that I think that I kind of was the impetus for this conversation tonight is I think over the last couple of months, maybe, our activities, our combined activities, both of you have been on the internet, you know, a long time, and both have been very engaged. And I know that you play a lot in the Twitter sandbox, but as I was sort of getting re-engaged with Twitter and starting to kind of post a lot of the, you know, a lot of the card action and some from the Card Trader, we kind of discovered that, okay, we had some mutual interest in that sandbox as well. And it was kind of fun to start engaging. And I think it really said a lot about what, when I think of collecting, or when I think of, you know, whether it's physical or whether it's digital, the joy of finding like-minded people who also enjoy and can kind of come at it regardless of where you're at. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you both together. But I wanted to get some proper introductions. So I'll go my screen left to right. I'll go Tano, then Marvel. Actually, it should be Marvel, then Tano, if I want to go alphabetical order based on your shirts. But Frank, could you introduce yourself and how you have kind of come to find this fandom in the form that you have? It's a tall order.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Frank Mulder. Just so you know, what I do is I'm a manager for AFES. For those who don't know, that's the Army and Air Force Exchange Service. We run a retail operation globally supporting the U.S. warfighter. As you can tell, I'm a Brit. I lived in the U.S. for 6 years. I've been a fan of Star Wars pretty much my entire life. I was one of the fortunate people as a very small child taken to the cinema by my parents in 78 in the U.K. Mm. So I was a little less than 5 years old. Very few memories about it. I really just kind of remember the Death Star trench sequence, and that's it. More recently, coming to the US, and like you mentioned earlier, Celebration, that just blew my mind. I mean, I was already engaged very much on social media, like say Twitter, trying to reach out to other people in the community, because, you know, in my day-to-day life, there's not many people that like to delve quite so deeply into Star Wars as a lot of us do. So to be able to reach out on Twitter and find people like yourselves, that's very rewarding.
Excellent. Thank you. David, how about yourself?
My name is David Nicely. I am a business development manager for a global tape company. I deal in our reactive chemistry line. Like Frank, I went to see Star Wars when it opened as a very small child. Not opening weekend, but later in the summer of 1977, my grandfather took me. He was a huge fan of science fiction, and he thought this would be something we could do. He thought it was going to be a cute little movie. And the part that I remember most is Vader entering Tantivine 4. That's the part that has always stuck with me, is that entrance of Vader coming through those doors. And the story my grandfather told me was that I was on the edge of my seat. He was worried that I was going to be petrified, and there I had scooted up in my seat thinking, like, you know, what's this going to be like? So I've been a fan my whole life. You know, obviously there's always been ups and downs, the dark years where we had nothing. you know, and so excited when the prequels came out. You know, at that time I was married, and you know, my wife was a fan as well. But I think Return of the Jedi was the first one that she saw. So going to a midnight showing was quite different for her. In the last couple of years, been a lot more engaged in social media, trying to be, you know, as positive as possible. There's so much negativity out there anyway, and you know, really, it's you love what you love. Right. And so it's
exactly.
Been really great finding like-minded people that, and sometimes you can find things that you didn't know were a part of the fandom, you know, and I think that's what Celebration really opened up for me, was seeing people's takes on characters or, you know, books or comics or sequences and movies that really opened up my mind to think that changed my viewpoint on those things. So I always try to look for the positive in everything.
One of the things that I like from seeing both of these screens and behind you is I'm seeing a healthy bit of collectibles. I see a lot of Funkos, and I see some figures on the top of Frank's shelf, but I also see a nice shelf in back of David. So what it also tells me is that you have either a long history with collecting some, or you've really spent a lot of catch-up in the last few years. Frank, I'll start with you. Where is the story closer to? Has it been a long love affair, or has it been a rapid catch-up?
So it's a little of both, really. Back in the 90s, I suppose, the early 90s, I had a compulsion with toys and trading cards. That's when my main collecting happened. I used to, every Saturday, with friends, get in the car, day off, go up to Southampton to Bassett's Comic World. Was on a particular street along from Forbidden Planet. That was one of our haunts every Saturday. Or it'd be over to Portsmouth to Time Frame and South Sea Toys and Games. So there was a few places nearby that were able to feed an addiction that it rapidly became. So I guess early 2000s, as Dave would say, when the movie started to kind of peter out a little bit and people weren't quite so engaged, my collector did the same. More recently, like you say, with Funkos, a couple of years ago, as a birthday present, my wife Amy bought me a subscription to Smuggler's Bounty, and that opened the floodgates. So I have tried to be disciplined as best I can. I try and select only the ones I really do want rather than everyone I see. So I've passed up a couple with that intention to try and just be well-behaved. when it comes to trading cards more specifically, that was something I really went off of. I was collecting all sorts back in the 90s. The Alien vs. Predator sets. There was the FLIR Ultra sets back then. The X-Files, everything I could get at the time. And that was what I mean. I was kind of a bit of a scattergun approach. If it was available, I would buy it. And again, I moved those collections along. And just more recently, actually just finding Rebel Base Card Podcast was what kind of started that ball rolling again. And again, as you mentioned, the app, the Star Wars Card Trader app. Oh, it'll suck you in and it'll hang on to you, absolutely. And it did that to me.
David, how about yourself?
For me, some of it has been a long time. It's sort of shifted, similar to what Frank had mentioned. And then there's been more of a recent catch-up. I still have some original toys, the X-Wing Snow Speeder Death Star playset. The two early ones that really kind of got me into collecting were baseball cards and comic books. For the most part, comic books have continued in that time. But as of recently, Funko has been a huge hit in our family. My kids love it. My sons have started collecting football cards and G.I. Joe action figures as well. So we're sort of, you know, passing down that love of collecting things.
David, I did want to kind of make a follow-up. When you're talking about collecting, you know, collecting by nature is accumulating. In a place where, in a large family such as yours, when does space or efficiency of space begin to become something that goes hand in hand with the accumulation of?
It's a good question. It's sort of like what goes in the basement and what gets shown. So luckily there are some things, you know, what I try to do with some things is, you know, as sort of Frank mentioned, is it really necessary? Or is it something that we can make more of a family thing? Like my daughter's a huge Harry Potter fan, so some of the Funkos behind me are actually hers. And displaying them in my office allows her to, you know, kind of build on that collection.
Excellent. Yeah, that is something. And I think, you know, like when I go into my kids' room and I spent some time in there today, I think I got about a third of the place cleaned. And it was one of those, you know, where you just get in piles. And my son has a very large Funko Pop collection on both walls. He has a Marvel wall and then he has a Star Wars wall. Thankfully, that hasn't done too much more. But, you know, with the Legos, and I think that's a big thing, like as we were setting aside some Legos, and you start to go through it, and part of you goes like, oh, yes, obviously we should, you know, they both sort of outgrown that version of Legos, right? There's the Legos that are on Dad's shelf up here, then like, nah, that stays there. But, you know, the pedestrian Legos stay over there, but it is something where you go through this phase, you go through these phases with them, and it's hard for me to have, you know, to let go of that, because that is such a part. You have the not only that connection with your own collection stuff, but the things that they you've seen them go in and out of as they grow up. Has that the case been for you as well, David, or is it just like, oh, we got to get this out of here?
No, 100% agree. And it's something that's funny because my wife and I talk about this all the time that just speaking from my own experience, my father's generation fixed up cars and collected cars, and I've never been very much on the mechanical side. And I, every time we go to the store and we see all these great toys, I'm like, this is my generation. We have the money now. This is what we do with it, right? You know, we collect these things. So yeah, I get really excited. And when something kind of goes to the wayside, it's sort of, there's a little part of me that gets a little sad if they're not as excited about it as I am. You know, they're like, oh yeah, it's done, let's tear it apart. And I'm like, no.
Frank, that shelf behind you, is this in a room that's for public display?
Yeah, this actually is one corner of the living room. these bookshelves right behind me were originally filled with Amy's books, which are, I'm ashamed to say now, stacked probably 5 feet tall in a closet. So these are her shelves. They're kind of on loan to me currently. Like you and David both mentioned, you know, we have one room where we have more of this stuff that we just don't have room for in here. And we're planning at some point to convert a room We've seen several people do beautiful jobs of converting a particular room, or as Dave was saying, they're a basement if you got it, you know, beautifully decorated, perfect for displaying, well lit. So that's our goal in the end, whenever that may happen. You know, sometimes those things you'd like to do tomorrow take a little bit longer, but we have that in mind. So yep, these are long-term loan from my wife. Yeah.
Yeah, one thing it's sort of glad, and I think we all sort of went through the stages where you had the bookshelves, and then you had the DVD and VHS shelves, and it's like, well, that all had to go, right? You know, thankfully, digital made it easy for us to move those along to make room for, you know, this is a little hard, more harder to convert to digital, but we will get to the Card Trader app here in a little bit.
That's true, absolutely, and of course, you know, the pops are just one part of it. Again, like you said, again, I see there with David's collection, all manner of things, and it spills across every surface in the house. If it's not a fridge magnet, it's something on the mantelpiece or a book on the coffee table. It's everywhere. It intrudes into every last corner available, and I'm sure that's not just me, but
also something that I've been wanting to kind of talk to, if I ever get a chance to talk to Steve Sansweet over at Rancho Obi-Wan and whoever will listen. We've gone through these periods where you have the run up after the original movie comes out. It's fair to say we all lived through these ramp ups. So you know, there isn't too much after the original movie, and then it starts to ramp up. You get everything from cards, comics, and you know, figures to bed sheets. And then, you know, you go through, you know, that crests after Return of the Jedi. And then you have that second buildup, as I see David's Episode One poster, where you have to, you know, like, I was on the other side of the planet at that time, so we didn't get nearly the ramp up that that we did here with the toys and everything. And it starts to die after the prequels are done. And then you have this third ramp up, you know, when The Force Awakens comes out, where you just start seeing everything, you know, when it starts permeating into like the 7-Eleven or something like that, where you're going, do I want a lid? Yeah, I think it also culminates when I'm in Denny's when Solo comes out, right? Not only do you have the Solo cards at Denny's, which is a great set, by the way, but also you have those cup lids, right? I don't know if, did either you see the Denny's cup lids or managed to grab one or all of them?
We got one lid. We went and got some cards, and we were able to get one lid. We don't have a Denny's really close to us. The one that was closest to us closed. We had to go to the other side of town, but we did make a nice little pilgrimage over there solely for the Solo stuff.
Yeah, so specifically the Episode One, the Phantom Menace, KFC were carrying those lids. You see the Jar Jar Binks, the
right.
Queen Amidala, those kind of things. The one was actually in Portsmouth at the end of Commercial Road, which is the main road for Portsmouth. They had the full size Darth Maul standee in there as well. You know, the one that you see come up every once in a while for sale that costs a fortune. I'd love to have in the corner of the house. Again, don't have space for it, but I'd move something out to get that installed, I think. But yeah, so that was KFC in the UK.
So yeah, we have these, you know, these periods where you have this huge ramp up and then it sort of winds down a little bit. And one of the questions I will probably pose, you know, as I get guests on is, do you think that we will see, I'll pose that out, David, I'll start with you. Do you think, in your opinion, we will see another big ramp up like we did before, or are we kind of past that?
I feel like we're kind of past it, to be honest with you, only because of what I've seen locally here. Even trying to find toys is very difficult. You know, the Walmarts or the Targets are supposed to have their displays, and there's virtually nothing there.
Yeah, I think I'm experiencing pretty much exactly what David is there. You know, you'll always see that there's going to be product launches and such, but it's been pretty sparse recently. With the rise of Skywalker, a lot of people are reporting that supermarkets like Walmart and such had the spaces available but just didn't seem to be filling them. So I think this is giving way to the Amazons, the online stores, even Walmart online, Target online, and usually that's a bit of a race to get there first. That can be a challenge, you know, especially if those must-have items, again like Funkos, where everyone's got an exclusive, or now with the carbonized figures that Hasbro's bringing out, you know, from time to time. High demand, low availability. It seems to be an up at 3 a.m. to place an order kind of an ordeal. So It's making it more difficult. And maybe that's taken the wind out of the sails of what would have normally been, like you saw again with those prequels, the huge amounts of stock merchandise that Toys R Us were carrying. And those, like you just mentioned there, the fast food chains were having everything. So it does feel like they're dialing that down a little bit as the years have passed.
So I'm wondering, David, then, what do you think you prefer most? Do you prefer collecting in a space where there's a ton of product, or do you prefer when it's more sparse or more, you know, very focused release of products? Where do you think that you would prefer, I'll say?
To be honest with you, I think I like the wider variety for a couple of different reasons. You know, a lot of my collecting sometimes tends to be character driven. You know, if there's a particular character that I like, I want to make sure that we get that, or if there's one that I find interesting, like the Black Series Sith Trooper. You know, it was near impossible to find those. I still haven't seen one on a shelf in any of our local stores around here. And I'll go back to kind of the positivity. I think the more that's available, it gives everyone an opportunity to be engaged with these. And when it becomes more sparse, what we see is costs being driven up on eBay and frustrated people. And I think it, you know, leads them to not wanting to be engaged in this franchise or any franchise for what it would be.
That's a good point. Frank, how do you feel? Do you prefer collecting with reckless abandon product out there? Do you feel it's, you know, the targeted sniper-driven sales?
Yeah, like you said, that sniping, that can be frustrating. I prefer a more casual approach, like David alluded to there. There are a couple of friends I have at work who look out for certain things. I do the same. So we kind of network a little bit. The friends I do have who are interested in Star Wars and collecting, we kind of will keep an eye out for each other. Recently, the Futura Pops have been very, very difficult to get hold of. If I'm able to get a second one, he'll have one, and vice versa. So we do that. Pre-orders as well. If I can catch a pre-order early on, I'll get a second one for a pal. So that's handy. And networking, more so now with this larger community we have, that makes that a little easier as well. And that helps us avoid the people who are wanting to turn a profit on our backs. So I do try to avoid that as best I can and support the friends I have around me if I can. Yeah.
Excellent. A follow-up on you, Frank. I know that you said you work for AFIES. If it's still what I remember, there are still places on a base where it's almost kind of like their version of Walmart, where you have, pretty much what you can get. Do you see in places like that, do you see people come after certain things, or do you see, toys and collectibles in there at all? And then what kind of demand do you see for them?
Yeah, it's pretty limited, actually. I mean, we're north of Alabama, so I'm working on Redstone Arsenal. And it's a primarily retiree community up here. We have active people on post, but in a far lower number than retirees in the community. But you do see people come through looking for specific items. In fact, a few years ago, this gentleman came through looking for, this was when Rogue One had launched, and he was looking for the Sergeant Jyn Erso products, figures and such, because he and it turned out this gentleman was actually, I don't know if he was Rebel Legion, but he said he had a Rebel Trooper costume, so he must have cosplayed. He said he had the cockroach helmet, and he was looking specifically for those. I've seen Black Series come through again around that time of Rogue One, so not much recently. We've had some of the newer vintage looking like Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker figures, but it really does come down to just those more common products. Yeah.
Excellent. Where are your go-to places now? That did you have a Toys R Us in your general area?
We did have a Toys R Us on the north side of Indianapolis, but unfortunately, they were one of the ones that closed a few years ago. They did fairly decent with the Star Wars things. I have found that our Super Target used to have the best variety of Star Wars, what they were carrying. I've always been fairly disappointed in our Walmart. However, in the area, we do have a couple of dedicated toy and collectible stores that are, you know, mom and pop places. And they do a pretty good job, especially, you know, without marking things up too high. You know, obviously vintage toys are what they are, what they are. But like on some of the exclusive Funko Pops that have come out, whether it be San Diego or Celebration, those are fairly reasonable. So if it's a hard to find thing, or you're trying to find a missing piece of one, I sometimes will work through them to see if they can find it for me. They seem to have a pretty good network for that.
Who likes to go with Dad when he's on a collectible run? Who do you find? Is it more, or is it more than one?
It's more than one. Because they assume that if Dad's getting something, they get something.
I know how that works. Right? Yeah. Yeah, they're like, yeah. Money's going to move somewhere.
Right, yeah. It rotates in between them. So my older kids, not so much. They'll go with me just for the, like when we go to the comic store, because they just like the environment. It's a really unique store. It's got the largest back issue collection in the state. So there's literally like 50,000 back issues.
Oh, man.
So, you know, you can pull out a box and pull out comics from the 70s and the 80s, and they're just like, what? This is amazing. But they do a huge amount of business in Funko Pops, and they always seem to have very unique ones that we don't see. And so we usually only see them at cons, you know, some of these, because they're just like odd. Like, you know, I'm sure it was like the, you know, the multicolored Batman ones that they had a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the only place I've ever really ran into those is, you know, either cons, but this comic shop's had a few of them. So
when you guys, now I know that being in Indianapolis, there are a couple of cons there, but for you, Frank, is it a little further away that if you're wanting to try to con it? This is, of course, in the before time.
Yeah, so there are a few that run locally, not that I've been to yet. In fact, the only convention of any kind I've been to in the UK, in the US so far, was Celebration last year. I used to go pretty frequently to one called Memorabilia in the UK that used to run Sandown Racecourse down by Esher near London, and Birmingham at the NEC in the West Midlands. And that's the one that's now the MCM Comic-Con. It used to be called Memorabilia when I used to go, and that was quite some time ago. So in this country, I'm kind of keeping an eye on that. Being not far from the Tennessee border, we're aware of some that go on fairly nearby. Fanboy Con, I've had friends that have gone there and had really good experiences. Again, I was keeping an eye on, I think it was June, July this year, there was supposed to be one in Birmingham, south of us here in Alabama. That, like you say, is most likely going to be off. It's a shame. I'd like to get to more, you know, have a greater exposure to the to that particular scene here. Celebration being very specific, loved every moment. But I'd like to have a broader experience with cons of all sorts. Of course, San Diego is one everybody wants to get to. Right. Friends back in the UK would wish to go there, and it's certainly on my bucket list. So fingers crossed, one day perhaps.
So, Frank, talk to me about your Celebration experience. What was the impetus, and what were you able to accomplish? I mean, it's no small task.
No, we managed to go for the full 5 days. We planned pretty well ahead. The biggest challenge we had at the time, my wife Amy had only about 6 months prior pretty extensive spinal surgery. So she was in a wheelchair for that whole time. So that was the biggest challenge with it. But McCormick Place was fantastic. The way it was set up, the help we got ahead of that was marvelous. Once we got there, everywhere we needed to get to, we had no problems. We were very lucky with the lotteries. We did get to the Celebration stage on the Saturday for the Galaxy's Edge panel. And we managed to get a couple of seats in the Galaxy stage as well for a couple. So every moment of it was just fantastic. It really was. As Dave was saying earlier, focusing on positivity in Star Wars, with there being so much negativity out there, it was, I think I've heard several people say the same thing. It really did feel like a reset. Everybody there was having the best time. Everyone was smiling, happy. It was just the purest experience of the happiness that Star Wars can bring. to so many different people, you know, just walking around, the young, the old, and everyone in between. It was, for me, it was mind-blowing. Definitely something I'd like to do again.
Excellent. David, how did you convince the Klan to hop in a car and go up with it? How did you logistically put that together?
So it logistically wasn't too bad. You know, we originally had discussed, you know, just some of us going, because this is something that I did not get a chance to do the celebrations that were in Indianapolis and early on. At that time, we weren't living in this area, so I didn't get a chance to do those. And, you know, everyone in the family knows how big of a fan that I am, the level of my obsession. So, you know, we were originally looking at these things. It was like, well, we can't do all 5 days. So how are we going to work this out? So we were able to stay at Embassy Suites. So, you know, able to, you know, get, you know, two rooms, and that would hold, you know, hold all eight of us. And so we just worked it out that instead of like me and two or three of my kids going for 3 days, that we would go for two, and then everyone, all of us, would go on the one. So we drove up on Thursday or Friday, I think it was Friday, and we spent the day at the, you know, doing some stuff in Chicago, and then drove to the hotel, and we're ready to go for Saturday.
And you were there all 5 days. David, were you there on Monday?
I was not. We had to come back on Monday morning.
Okay. I was going to say, that was my one day. Yeah, and like I said, after seeing like all this effort, you know, I think I had managed to snag the one ticket for the Monday that was still available, and 8 hours of basically ready, set, go. But, you know, it's when I'm seeing the pictures that you've been posting and just seeing the whole family there, that just really had to have been special.
You know, it really was, because I got a chance to share, you know, it's hard to explain to someone when you care deeply about something, you know, what it is that beyond the screen, right? It goes, what's beyond? It's the people behind the scenes that put so much their time, their effort, their love, and everything into it. And so, you know, for a couple of years, or for a year or so, we've been watching the Star Wars show. So there was a lot of things that my wife could be engaged in terms of a surface level. Mm-hmm. But it really hit her, the positivity. You know, we're waiting in line for a couple hours to get in, and Maddie, the head archivist, who I know Frank got a picture with as well, walked by, and my kids were like yelling her name out loud. She's like, you know, what do you want your picture with me for? Like, we watched you on the Star Wars show. You got the best job ever. And of course, the highlight for that day, that morning, was Anthony Daniels walking by, and we said, good morning, Mr. Daniels. And he stopped and talked to us for a few moments. And,
oh, nice.
You know, it was like, I looked at my kids and I'm like, you know who that is, right? And, you know, my older kids are like, yeah, my little ones like, no. I'm like, that's freaking C-3PO. You know what I mean? So, it was really cool, because we did a really good job of dividing up the day. We did the, that's going to slip my mind, where we went and built part of the Rogue One set, the diorama, with some of the kids, which is a really cool experience. My wife and daughters were on the floor for some of the Star Wars show. Some of it, they were up in the food court watching down, you know, depending on how crowded it got. Learned to play X-Wing with Tom Gross, some coffee with Kenobi.
There we go.
Got to meet John Tyler Christopher, the guy who does the action figure variants for Star Wars comics. So we just took different spots around. My wife and daughter got to meet Warwick Davis. So we planned it out that we were going to be there all day, to the point where we couldn't walk anymore. But more importantly, it was about enjoying being there together and you know, what we all enjoy. And everyone came out of there a bigger fan than what they went into.
Oh, that's awesome. Having finished those experiences, I'll put this question to the both of you then. In a perfect scenario, or in the before time, had either of you planned to go to Anaheim? It is a little further away. Frank, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so this time we hadn't. We'd actually planned to be making a trip back to the UK, which, of course, this whole situation now put that completely off the table. So we were not planning this time. We were hoping to be catching, like, all the feedback, the live streams, again, through Twitter and Instagram, all those experiences. We were hoping to get that experience through everyone vicariously, you know. Right now is anyone's guess, but no, we had not made plans this time. what we had said was Amy had been to Chicago before. It was my first time in Chicago, and I loved it. Mm. So if there is ever a Chicago celebration again, that'll be a no-brainer. We'll be on the way to Chicago. And this time, I think we'll probably drive as well. We flew that last time with the UK, you know, with Britain being such a small island, to drive for like 10, 11 hours, chances are in most directions you'd be in the ocean. So having driven from here to like to DC a number of times, it's totally doable. I would never have thought that someone like myself, who would drive maybe 2 hours and be exhausted at the end of it, would now be able to drive 8, 9, 10. So Chicago happens again, we will definitely be there. No questions.
David, I know that you know, what would be the logistics? Let's just say Corona, you know, not on the table. Was Anaheim in the cards for you, or is it just a little too far west?
We discussed it. We have a 12 passenger van, so we could all fit into it. That's not the issue, but it just is really too far. I mean, we're talking 2 days just to get out there and driving. So we had actually planned today we would have been in Florida. And the plan was to take the kids to Galaxy's Edge, do a little beach time and all that, and then drive actually back through Alabama, because I have some friends in Huntsville, which is a con that Frank should definitely try to experience. It was quite enjoyable. But unfortunately, yeah, I just think Anaheim, going that far west, is too much. But again, Chicago would be a no-brainer. Orlando, I think everyone has expressed an interest to go back.
Yeah, Orlando, I think... Although it's not, yeah, I've done the drive to Frank. I've done the drive to Florida, and it's not.
Okay.
You get really to Macon, and then you've pretty much there's nothing from Macon to Gainesville, Florida. There's just really it's just nothing but interstate, and it's one of those where I think at that point I would just probably fly, but yeah, the Huntsville one I have heard about. I did a little poking around, and that would be one that seemed to be kind of fun, because. As I have found some of these more regional cons, I think, you know, the one thing that, you know, the celebration did have, what I did like about McCormick was it was very, you know, it's very spread out, very organized. There was plenty of, you know, just about everything except parking. Parking was a little tricky and a little pricey. But if you're going to some of these more regional cons, you know, there's a limited number of guests. The pricing's not going to be as high. There's probably going to be a larger number of hotels that are available, because it's not, you know, you're not seeing the world crash in and you know, a bunch of, you know, like all the 40-year-olds, for all 40 and 50-year-olds from the United States crashing in one place. But I think that would be kind of fun to, you know, it'd be curious once this starts cleaning up. You have to, I think we know that San Diego is off the table. But I think a lot of these regional cons will take a cue from Celebration. It's been interesting how they have been doling out the information, right, to kind of see where they take their next steps, not just logistically, but legally. You know, what do you think predicting how, and Frank, when do you think this starts opening up?
Wow, that's a really good question. I have no idea. Right now, when you look at the numbers of the current, you know, the coronavirus, anyone's guess, really. I would hope how it will happen. I don't know that there will be a rapid de-escalation in the new cases and that things can start to return to normal. But the unfortunate thing is right now, I think we're all still in the thick of it. We certainly are at work. You know, we're on post. We're obliged. Everybody, every facility on post right now has to be masked all of the time. So we're not seeing any signs yet of anything about to improve anytime soon.
David, when I'm thinking about, you know, when you're thinking about taking family out, or, you know, when do you think you'd see some of these events opening up, and how would you approach that coming from a standpoint of you would want to see something, but, you know, maybe a bit of a safety issue. When do you think you'll be attending your next con?
You know, the one that we're kind of looking at possibly is the Cincinnati Comic Expo in September. But I'll be honest with you. I think if Dragon Con ends up canceling, we probably won't go to that, because if a con like Dragon Con is going to step away, I think there's two factors in there that would hit it for me. One, that would certainly mean that there's no chance for probably Indianapolis to reschedule theirs. I'm assuming now it's going to be canceled. They had to cancel in June. But it's going to drive more people to Cincinnati because Dragon Con gets a really big pull from what I would call this lower Midwest area, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Lexington, Kentucky, Louisville, Nashville. It's really popular in this area. They do a fantastic job of advertising. So if Dragon Con happens, I think we'll still consider going to Cincy. I don't know that we would do it as a full family, though. I don't know that I would take my younger ones. I think my wife has already kind of expressed a little bit of being timid about the situation of going. But part of it would be, too, you know, if the guest list stays the same, because there are a few people on there, that would be the reason I would go, the reason that I would attend. I haven't been to that one before, so not knowing is part of the apprehension that I have.
If Celebration happened, or let's say some of these cons that were scheduled for the fall and winter open up, what do you think the kind of precautions, what kind of precautions do you think you would take, and how would you approach going to a con as a fan? Would you, how would you do things differently, or would you do things differently, Frank?
Yeah, I think I'd probably follow in that the instructions we're all getting now. You know, the problem with the con, of course, is just that weight of numbers. And like David mentioned there as well, the attending guests and vendors, you know, would they be risk tolerant to the level? So maybe if these things go ahead, they'll be more sparsely attended, vended. And again, as guests, you may see fewer. I'm not really sure it's going to be possible to get those tens of thousands, if nothing changes dramatically, to get the tens of thousands. You often see these larger cons through the doors. To be fair, I'm not sure what precautions should be taken, either for us, the attendees, beyond the kind of things we're doing now. You know, we're being told social distancing. That's not really something that's going to be possible at a con of any size, really. So, that's a very difficult question to answer. It really is.
David, what kind of precautions, like, say, for example, if you go, you say you might be taking fewer, or you might going, what kind of precautions might you take, or how would you might approach things at a con if you were going to try to take a stab at it?
Yeah, you know, I think we would, instead of doing a 2 or 3 day pass, we'd probably only go for a day. If we were going to look for particular guests that we wanted, you know, for a photo or autograph opportunity, we would probably choose between one or two, no more, because of the time standing in line, I think, would be a little bit of an issue. Obviously, the, you know, gloves, face masks, those types of things. I would be very hesitant to do some of the normal things I do, where I sit down on a floor and start going through boxes of comics, or, you know, shoulder to shoulder going through these, because you're going to be hyper aware of what's going on around you. So I think I would need to see a vendor list, you know, see, maybe look them up online as well, to see kind of what they're known for, what they carry, and be really selective about, you know, instead of a perusing up and down aisles, it would be more of a, we've got a hit list, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to try to get out of here as fast as we can.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, it kind of really takes a stab at the community itself, because one of the things I think you both would agree that, you know, when you're at Celebration, there's just this, you know, it's like pure concentrated Star Wars love and passion. And you could bump into a total stranger, you like his shirt or her shirt, and just have this conversation for the next 20 minutes. And I know even as I was leaving, I had more than one, or somebody comes by and, you know, doing some cosplay, and you're like, hey, so it's going to be very interesting, you know, all these facets in place once we are allowed to kind of go back in. You know, there'll be that hesitation there, perhaps, of people that, you know, this is why you kind of maybe want a vaccine as fast as possible. It's like, please fix this so that we can get back to. But, you know, the more likely scenario is it's going to be a very timid approach back into this realm, which we all really want to get back into, but we're still trying to figure it out.
The other alternative, of course, is we all join the 501st and all go wearing helmets and masks. You know, just a thought.
That's not a bad idea. Do either of you venture into or the realm of cosplay or have thought about it?
I have a Shadow Trooper kit ordered, and it should hopefully be here by June, and so I will be doing my first venture into cosplay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I have a Revenge of the Sith Obi-Wan Kenobi costume that he bought me a few years ago. I did wear that one day at Celebration. It's more the costuming rather than the cosplaying, because on no day of the week do I look anything like Obi-Wan Kenobi. But hey, I can wear the robes and get a kick out of that. So I did make a point and trim myself a couple of years ago to a Saberforge Redeemer, which is based on the Episode 3 Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber. So I had a lot of fun with that, a lot of fun strutting around. And the strangest thing is you feel entirely dressed appropriately at Celebration. It feels like, yes, this is when I'm wearing jeans and a T-shirt, you feel a little out of place. But when you're wearing armor, robes, yep, you're dressed just for the occasion.
Oh, man. Yeah, David, what made you decide on the Shadow Trooper?
I've always kind of been a big fan of them. Wanted to do something a little bit different. And a couple years ago, our local 501st Garrison had a, you know, hey, come meet the 501st and see what it takes. And there was a really a huge abundance of just white TK, but there were a couple Shadow Troopers and Shadow Biker Scouts standing over there. I was like, those guys look cool, you know, with the shiny, glossy black, you know, armor. And so I thought it was a little different. Black is more slimming, too. Greg, and for those of us who are short and stout.
Noted.
I don't know if you can see this. Let me see if I can get this up to... That is a work in progress. I think I may have given some pictures out, but I am trying to assemble the Matt, the radar technician outfit, as my foray into. It's certainly probably not 501st approved, but when I talked to that fella at on the podcast at C2E2, and I found it was pretty much off the shelf, I said, I'm in. You know, if I can eBay most of this. But what I found is more expensive than I thought is the hair. The wig is actually more expensive than I thought it would be. And let me tell you now, I haven't had to think about hair in a long time. But what I would say is that, you know, when you start going into that world, you know, if you want to talk about going into like the cosplay or you're doing all that, that's a door that's real scary to open. And, you know, when you're looking at that and then you're thinking like, oh, I've got to get like some kind of, I guess some kind of wig nylon so that it's not itchy and stuff. And you're just like, I don't, you know, I'm trying to figure out how am I going to bring this home to the wife? This is going to be like, yeah.
I would say again, expanding on, you know, I'm petrified of putting this thing together. I'm not handy. There's a joke in the house that if the toilet's plunged or toilet's clogged, I could blow it up by just unclogging it. But the amount of support in this community is phenomenal. Like just having some conversations with the people, they're like, listen, PM me. I'll show you how we'll do the cuts. I don't live too far from you. Maybe we can get together and we can do certain components together. You know, so again, another aspect of how positive the community really is. So it helps take care of some of that fear. I don't know that I'll ever get the 501st approved. We'll see how it works. But if duct tape can hold it, then I will wear it.
And that's something I you were alluding to Frank. And once I get this together and you start even, you know, putting pictures out, like I think people like the, you know, people kind of get the, you know, the work in progress shots. And I think that, but I think the first time I would put this on and start to wear it, it really seems like something that I don't know if I can, it's almost like going to Celebration. You don't quite, you talk about it, but until you take that step out and you go, I'm going to walk out like this and I have no idea how it's going to be received. You know, that's something I think I can only, I can't imagine until it happens. And these guys in the 501st that are going even beyond, like they're not only dressing up, but they're doing, you know, they're going out to you know, hospitals and whatnot. They're trooping for good. And they're just taking it above and beyond where I'm just like, well, I just want to have some fun and walk around and play Star Wars. So But good luck on that. And I really love that. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you guys together, because it's been very fun over the last several weeks, like I said, in the Card Trader app. And I've been in there pretty much since the beginning. I got in early 2015 when it came out in May, and then, you know, kind of put it away, got back in later, and then dove back in. And I can say there's a lot of blood on my hands when it comes to the money that I've probably blown on this particular app. And unfortunately, I am not a free-to-play player in this particular app. I can in Bunt, Huddle, which is not, there's not much in Huddle happening, Skate, some of the others, I am free-to-play. But it seems like in the non-sports entertainment, I try to keep the damage to Star Wars, but I think it's been fun recently in finding both of you that have been, you know, that have been in there. Frank, how long have you been in the Card Trader app?
Strangely, actually, I found it probably, I don't know, maybe inside of 10 months ago, certainly inside of 12 months. And when I first came across it, I was really just, I was almost using it as an art portfolio. It was like, these are cool images from Star Wars. I was just enjoying looking at them. And then again, coming across your podcast, you know, you got a lot to answer for, Greg. That's when I started thinking, okay, you know, maybe that the door to returning to collecting that I used to enjoy so much there was a crack there, and it's wide open now. So and it's great. Like you say, it can be free to play, and that's the thing that's so amazing about it. You can get some of the most fantastic cards in free packs. So just a couple of days ago, we were all involved with the whole Star Wars Day, you know, May the 4th with you thing going on, and the Card Trader app just blew up. It was fantastic day to day for me personally. It was working perfectly. I missed a couple of the early on the green melds, you know, right, where you could get your blue bounties and switch them up. And I said thank you at the time for helping me with Dr. Pershing, but thank you again. That was the one I really wanted to get. I need to know more about that fella. But yeah, the way it's going, the variety of sets, the beautiful artwork, and even today, more sets drop in today. Oh, it'll just go on and on, and as long as it's still functioning, I'll be right there on the hour every hour, hitting up the free credits and free packs and whatever else is available.
David, when did you start getting into Card Trader?
The first time I had it, I think, was back in like 2018. I was doing it for a couple months, and just all kinds of issues with it. And I don't know if it was from my phone or whatever at the time. So it just was, you know, constantly crashing and so forth. So I actually just started getting back into it. Was it maybe like 3 months ago, 4 months ago? And part of it was that I kept hearing the advertisement on different podcasts, and then running across your podcast and hearing about it. I was like, yeah, I should really give this a go again. We do collect some of the physical cards when our local comic shop carries them. So it's like, yeah, this will be kind of fun. And it's been amazing. It's just, you guys have been a huge help. I only am able to do the free ones, but my kids really enjoy with it too. Sometimes they'll remind me, they're like, did you check it this morning? Did you get your 15,000 free credits? You know, we got to buy some packs. The new TK series, everyone loves, you know, with the different designs on the helmets, they think it's fantastic. We ended up getting a few of the autograph cards, which my kids just thought were absolutely amazing. You know, the fact that, you know, that we don't have a physical one, you know, it's on the phone, and, you know, they like to look through there again. So it's been a lot of fun, because it's something too where I can show the kids. And sometimes we talk about when I was a kid, a lot of times those cards would have stories on the back. Now, these sometimes don't, you know, on the back of them, but it would be like, you know, here's this character. Can you guys remember where he's from? You know, so now when we're watching the movies, they're able to spot these certain characters. So, again, it's another way for me to engage my family in Star Wars. Make them drink the Kool-Aid.
Exactly. One of the things that I do like, and you'll notice that in the app, you know, physical cards do make their appearance, and sometimes they're pretty easy to spot because there's a lot more on the backs of the cards rather than just saying Star Wars Card Trader. One of the things that make Star Wars Card Trader a little easier on the free-to-play is that it gives out more credits. Now, I have a whole folder full of apps, and you can compare. Like, if you're in Marvel Collect or Disney, you know, there's not as much coins being given out. And so sometimes, and even a little more in Bunt, but it's harder. Like, if you decide to go for a set, you know, if you're in free-to-play, you really want to make it, you know, you really have to be focused on it, because you can drain your coffers pretty fast, and you're going to start to find, what are the odds? Like, if there is a 1 in 5, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 5, okay, I can get, you know. And what's interesting also on Card Trader is they have, on their new build, they have those multi-packs, like the 12,500, which I think is the sweet spot if you're doing free-to-play, because you're getting six packs. The odds are better even if you're in a 1 of 3, 1 of 5, or you're 1 of 10. If you're doing a 1 of 10 or higher, then you really have to be focused on it, or you want to develop that, you know, the understanding of trading and find your trading partners, you know, because as you probably have found going into, let's say you're going into the general trade feed, it's a bit of a frenzy. And it can be, you know, you really have to kind of, you know, it's like watching a river going by, or if you're putting out, you know, like dupes for needs or that kind of thing, you really have to kind of go in there with something. But something that I liked about, you know, engaging some of the relatively newer players or folks that maybe been in there is that I'd never really thought about hoarding until I was trying to find a way to go, look, I really want to engage with this group. But, you know, I'm the idiot with 100,000 of cards already, I don't even know how many I have at this point. So, you know, I want to find something to make it fun. And that's when I started going, I'm hoarding Pyre. I don't care. Just give me, what do you got? And then there are some things I'm not chasing some of these variant colors. Or if I have dupes, I'm like, well, they could sit there. Like Frank, like some of my physical cards, they could sit there doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Or I could go, you know what, go play. And then someone has been fleecing me for my green Clone Wars. You know, he's been coming back and he's giving me 9 Pyres, but I'm like, I almost had to stop him at one going, no, you can't have the James Arnold Taylor autograph. I do have my limits. I don't know why, but, you know, some newer players also as well, it's like, well, I'm giving you 2 for 1 going, start looking at the card counts, kid. You know, just look at the back and see, you know, I don't know if you guys have stories about trying to do trades or some really wacky trades that have been coming your way and any experiences that you care to share.
I haven't had too many. I did have someone reach out, and I'm trying to remember which one it was now. It was the one that was just out a few weeks ago with the multicolored Death Star, and where you could combine them all and get like the ultraviolet, I think is what they were.
I'm sorry, it's
going off the top of my head. Yes. And so someone offered me, it sent me a message, wanted me to trade, and was like, it was like 2 blue series standard cards of like Anakin Skywalker, and I was like, sorry, no, I really like this card, but I don't. I think most people probably look at my ranking and were like, yeah, he probably doesn't have a whole lot, so I don't think I get as much as probably what you guys do.
Yeah, I actually don't get. I don't receive too many trades apart from, you know, your card squadron group, which is really opt out to round out a few sets. I try and be considerate. Even just any old trade I'm putting through is I'll always go and type that into the search bar of the person I'm looking at as well. Because the last thing I want to be doing is getting that one card. Greg, David, I've been to both of you before. I thought, oh, that's a great card. And when I've taken a look, it's, oh, we've only got one. Okay, I'll move on, find someone else. So I try to be courteous in that respect. When it comes to receiving questionable trade offers, you know, a lot of the ones that I've been working hard on recently, the Gilded, the weeklies, I think we're up to like week 11. I only realized that a couple of days ago, and I thought, okay, when this is finished, we're going to be playing this Monday, Tuesday, it's like 5 of the 7 days of the week getting these cards, and sometimes in very low release numbers. I've been 3 months of getting Gilded. So I do lock up some of my cards as well, you know, just to take them out of that. If I do get, like I say, if you get a dupe or something, then that's all good. But one feature I was hoping that maybe will become available one day, I'm not sure if it ever will do, would be that you could set it so you could trade your dupes down to just one. So it would like automatically lock your last one down. Because a couple of times, I know you'd sent us both, Greg, you'd sent David and myself trades recently. And if you've offered, even if you've got multiples for the same card, and you offer us one each, if David takes it first, it drops out of my trades, right, and vice versa. So I was hoping that maybe there'd be some kind of a facility to do that, lock the one and let all of your multiples go. And I did see in the newsfeed today, I believe Monday the 11th, there's a new user interface update coming. So maybe that will come along one day. I'm not sure. But apparently some more changes coming soon.
Yeah, one of the things I know that there are working on, there'll be a change, and I do believe it's already in Bunt, is, you know, the awards, the awarding of, and where you can find them. So in some cases, you'll have to claim that award. Now, there, you know, if you remember a time in the previous build, you know, the awards don't look as great as they used to. I think mainly probably because of how those cards were either, you know, designed as far as the size of them, or, you know, how they fit into this interface. And so, it, you know, in some cases, I'm interested in completing sets. I do complete sets, but I don't go play too much in the award playground, because I know, like, that's still a bit of a work in progress. But I do like the fact that there's still, not only is there still being work done, but I think both of you follow, they have some people in the app. So not only do you have the Star Wars card trader, you know, the app admin, but you also have Brandon, one of the designers for it, which is nice, because you are getting, they can kind of see, Tops can kind of see that this activity, and you also seeing, like, all right, they're kind of getting a pulse, not only from us, but from a lot of other players as well. And if people who are going in the Reddits and all that kind of stuff, they can kind of see what's working, what's not working. And, you know, they have their priority as well, but as long as you can kind of go, you know, we kind of keep that out there, I think it does help move that puck along until, you know, we can get to where it's get some of these kinks out, I think.
Absolutely. And Brandon's been, he seems to be very engaging, you know, and it's nice to be able to put something out on Twitter and get response back, you know. So when you are making an observation you want to put out there, that they say, hey, that's either great, you know, if something positive's happened, or if there was a glitch there, like, oh, hang on, we'll take a look at that. You know, they put in to maintenance mode, they let you know for a couple of hours, and then it comes back up good as new. So it's great that they're so responsive in that way.
David, has your response been, have you found other players in your social feeds that you didn't know they were into Star Wars Card Trader, or you have maybe encouraged them and maybe they've dived in?
There have been a couple that I did not realize that were involved. So it was really kind of nice for us to have another way of kind of connecting with one another. And it's kind of sparked some interesting conversations, because although thinking or having an understanding that they knew of Star Wars, not realizing that they had certain parts of that fandom that they were very passionate about. So it's led to some pretty interesting conversations. I have a friend who was in the social circle who is an absolute ship freak, loves all the vehicles and ships in Star Wars. And he was following one of the same guys that I do on Twitter, Admiral Nick. And we just started talking about, you know, different ships, which ones we like. So yeah, it's been fun. And I certainly tried to encourage, you know, other people as well. My twin daughters have gotten phones now, but either one of them won't get on the app. I'm like, I need more free cards, guys. You know, help me out. But no, we're always trying to encourage it. Yeah, I think, again, it's just another way to experience the fandom. And like you guys said, it's, you get that response. And I think a lot of it comes from, even the stuff that we're frustrated by, comes from a place of positivity. It's right. Not complaining to complain. It's complaining because we just want to see, this is so cool, and if we could get it to work right, more people could, you know, engage with it.
Exactly. What about yourself, Frank? How have you seen more and more people get on it, or have you been able to encourage a couple of people? I'm talking from a place of not looking for more farming, coin farmers, or card farmers, but let's just say I have a curiosity to find if there are more card trader folks out there.
Yeah, so our friend Carl down in New Zealand, we started tagging him with the Card Squadron group a few weeks ago, and I'd spoken to him already. He actually visited the US a couple of years ago, and he stayed with us. And while he was here, he had some, I think it was the Star Wars Evolution physical cards. He had a hobby box delivered here so he could take it back home with us, with him. So he's into the physical cards in a pretty big way, certainly in the last couple of years. And we'd mentioned the whole app to him, and he was kind of curious about it. And him and his son, they're really enjoying it now. I think, like you, I think the first couple of days they may have spent more than they intended to, but they had some pretty impressive dual signatures turn up in the first couple of days. So I think they've dialed it back a bit now. I try and send trades every day or as often as I can, just to keep them interested. But that was one in particular that he's really sunk his teeth into it. So
that's our
contribution to this point.
There we go. And one of the nice things, and you have seen that, especially with the recent, like with Masterwork, I think it had probably wrapped up by the time this episode comes out. But one nice thing about the physical cards, when they do make their way into the app, is you will typically see a lot of parallel cards that in the physical realm are a little harder to get. But in the Card Trader app, a lot of times you'll see these parallels show up of the base cards. And it's nice because as someone who collects a lot of physical, you know, I get a chance to get more of those, but you're also introducing into the digital. It's like, yeah, these are what the physical cards look like. And they have had evolution. It's really nice when a lot of these sets do trickle in. And usually, you know, like several months later, you'll start seeing them. The Masterwork, the physical sets come out around December. And so now it's nice to see. And also because those cards are physically very expensive to get. And they're very thick, so they don't fit in a binder very well. So I don't mind having Masterwork when it's basically on my phone. It's just as thick as everybody else's. And those signatures that you don't often see. You know, you get one per box, but you're when they're doing some of these drops, you're seeing several autographs in there, which is really nice. Especially, David, for folks like your kids who, once again, you got to keep working on them. If Daddy needs more coins, he's like, that's... You know, that's what, 45,000 per day if you really play your cards right. But yeah, used to getting on the wife's iPad and, you know, get that second account. You're looking at a particular card and then you've got to do the trades back and forth. After a while, you just give up because, like, it's really too much work. But if there are people actively on the app in the household, it makes it easier because then I don't have to log into the app on your machine, on your device, you know, click the coins and then force the trade. You just go, well, you know, at the dinner table, we can just talk about what Dad needs. Dupes for needs at the dinner table. That's how it is.
Very good.
Right. Exactly. More armory. Give them to me all.
Exactly. I want to finish up, and I appreciate you guys being on, but I know that Disney Plus was a big... I'm sure it was a day one as soon as it became available, just based on how much stuff is on your wall. I can imagine it's day one. How has Disney Plus affected your lives or changed your lives at all in the household? Frank, I'll start with you.
Okay, so just to give you a little info, before Celebration last year, I had not seen all bar a couple of episodes of Clone Wars. So it was on Netflix at that time. And every time I went to see an episode, there was a countdown in the top corner. It was saying like 21 days, 18 days, 7. So I had 6 seasons to get through as rapidly as possible to try and get up to speed with everybody else who would have watched it again and again before going to Celebration. So right now, with all of that on Disney Plus, in fact, just last weekend, I watched the movie again, which was the first time since it was at the cinema. And I don't have many memories of at the cinema. Certainly the story I saw when I watched the movie just last weekend was not in my head anywhere. I did not remember anything about that. So I've thoroughly enjoyed that. Now with all the brand new content, Mandalorian, you know, that couldn't have gone better for Disney. That this last 12 episodes of Clone Wars, especially this Siege of Mandalore arc. I mean, if they can keep on bringing out that kind of content, with the reactions they're getting, that positive reaction again and again and again, the sky's the limit for Disney Star Wars. It really is.
Excellent. David, Disney Plus must have been a boon for the household because it doesn't seem to have a limit on number of devices, but did it really take root in the household? Is everybody on it, but on have they created different profiles?
Yeah, so we're limited on profiles. We had to go and kind of like split up once we get into the down the kids, because I believe 7 is the limit on the profiles. Oh, wow. So we had to combine the boys and combine the younger girls. But, you know, day one, we watched it. And as Frank said, you know, The Mandalorian, kind of, it was something that we could watch. It was appointment television. We would all watch it together on Friday morning. Normally for my job, I travel a lot. So this would be something Fridays normally I don't. I'm usually at home. So it would be something that we could watch in the morning. Or, you know, later in the evening if something came up. But, you know, as my wife and I have been Disney fans for forever, and it's really nice that we can start to also engage the kids in different things other than the Frozens of the world. As my wife tells me, there are more things in Star Wars. But, like, you know, the Little Rise or the Little Resistance shorts, my daughters love those. And so they're experiencing Star Wars in a different way than I did, because I didn't have animation growing up. And I'm a huge fan of the animation now, and I've been able to watch it. But, you know, during this COVID quarantine, I'm not able to travel. So a lot of times while I'm working, I have my iPad up and I'm just playing the movies just as background noise, you know. And it's been great because it's having that access to it. I can even look for particular scenes, you know, because we'll have had a discussion before about, you know, what was said here, because I'm horrible at misquoting some of the lines. I'm the first one to admit it. And it's, you know, so we go back through and find it. Or, you know, maybe you, it's one of those things where it's maybe like not necessarily like an Easter egg, but like a little blooper or something happening, you know. And
right,
so it's been a huge, it has drastically affected how much we watch Netflix and Prime. I mean, I would say that we're 80% Disney Plus.
It's got to be a little different, Frank, because now you've got Star Wars. You've got it on demand anytime, any scene, any property. Okay, you know, once Solo gets off Netflix, but I don't know. You know, like, you know, other than when we've had, I think the closest thing was when Clone Wars was on Netflix, and you could just binge at any time. Now you have the situation where I can dial it up. You know, it's going to be interesting to watch a generation of fans who will not ever know when Star Wars wasn't just whatever, whenever. And that's just, it's got to be kind of amazing of how it's, is it changing the way you're thinking about Star Wars, or is it just, you know, just that pellet I'm just getting, you know, what do you think about just having it on demand all the time?
Well, I quite like the mix of what we get now. As David just said, appointment viewing. I love going back to the old days when, you know, a TV show came out at a day, on a particular day at a time. And it looks like Disney's retraining the audience for that. So you get the best of both worlds.
Right.
You can, like you say, Clone Wars, Rebels, all the movies in your pocket on your phone the whole time, you know, thousands of hours of entertainment. But then the new stuff coming up every week, making it a time for everyone to get around the TV and enjoy that experience. And also to be able to process and digest that for a week. That's what I'm liking as well. You know, like I mentioned, when I did binge watch Clone Wars, I've retained probably 30% of what I saw.
Right.
But now we can see a Mandalorian or a Clone Wars on a Friday. We've got the whole week to talk about it. Look at what people are saying on social media, watch those breakdowns on YouTube, and just chat with friends about it as well. And that brings a whole new richness to this. You know, everyone's separate thoughts, what they're taking from the story. When they see, like you mentioned, an Easter egg, or there's just a phrase that happens. It's like, well, what did that mean? And everyone gets their own ability to process that and say, well, I thought it was this. And you can bounce it off your friends. And I think that's helped community again. We keep on coming back to positivity, that ability to discuss and sometimes in quite in probably unnecessarily deep ways, which I'm sure we all get into those conversations from time to time. But it's just nice to be able to break it down, really talk to friends, and it's adding to the community, I think.
David, did the house get swept up in Clone Wars?
Sadly, no. Mainly just Dad. and part of it was that they were more of a Rebels fans than they were Clone Wars. I think for them, Clone Wars felt too familiar. And what I mean by that is because they've seen Attack of the Clones, they've seen Revenge of the Sith. And, you know, so it didn't have this, or had this familiarity to them that they just sort of like, yeah, I know this. you know, and why are there two Anakin Skywalkers? But seeing Rebels for them was completely different, you know, because you had brand new characters. You had, not that you didn't have them in Clone Wars, but you had a whole brand new setting. And so for them, I think it was a new entry point. But I did have them watch, the older kids, watch the Siege of Mandalore arc and going into these last ones. One is because I knew more emotionally they would kind of get the meaning of it, you know, not that there was anything that none of my kids could see. But one of the things that I've always told them about Star Wars is that, you know, a lot of fandoms, and this is not a knock on them, but they're like, you know, a sandwich where you have maybe like, you know, you have your two pieces of bread and something in the middle. And like Star Wars is, you would take a big jar of sand and dump it out. And each one of those pebbles is a layer that came out of that, that someone sees, that someone experiences, that something's a little bit different. And so I wanted them kind of to see that. And then all of a sudden they started making those tie-ins back to the movies themselves, but also, you know, having them read some of the comics as well. So I can start to see they're starting to make those full circles. And those last four episodes of Clone Wars, I can't say enough about it. You know, Dave Filoni and team there just did a phenomenal job.
What Frank? What was your assessment of that last act of the Clone Wars, the Siege of Mandalore? How did that impact you?
Oh wow! I think you've probably heard from everybody how emotional that all was. You know, we knew Order 66 was coming along. We'd seen some of that, of course, in Revenge of the Sith. They put it into video games and a few other media as well. And to see it in this way. That those clones who really do have the kind of relationships with the Jedi that we've seen for longer periods of time. You know, in the movies, when you saw Aayla Secura's clone sit on her, you know, okay, that was tragic, you know, what had happened, literally shot in the back. But now you've seen Ahsoka over seasons with Rex, especially through these last few episodes, you know, with redesigning, repainting their armor and such. And then that turn, it just really underlined it, made it far more emotional to watch, you know, for two people who moments before are expressing how much they mean to each other, how much they respect each other, the loyalty, the friendships they've created over a long period of time, literally having saved each other's lives, had each other's lives in their hands. And it comes down to one communication from Sidious. And it all falls apart. It was absolutely magnificent. Like David said, Dave Filoni, that guy is a genius. He definitely is George Lucas 2.0.
Awesome. I want to. Part of me wants to keep you guys on for another hour, but I know it's getting late for David. But I do have a question, and this is one I kind of formulated once I kind of, you know, once we got into that last arc. I started thinking now, you know, like a lot of times the prequels and myself, you get a little knock because of what Anakin and Hayden Christensen has to do in a short amount of time. You know, we're fortunate with the Clone Wars is that we had a long, several multi-year arc to get into the characters, a lot of who didn't get a lot of screen time or maybe didn't get a lot of, you know, even lines in the prequels. But I started to think, you know, as you start getting more used to, you know, like seeing Anakin or, you know, Matt Lantner and all that. And I was wondering, at the end of this, having gone through all these years of the Clone Wars animated series, do you find it easier or harder to buy Anakin's turn as portrayed in Revenge of the Sith? I'll let that sit for a minute. And the other person, the person I'm going to talk to second, is going to have a little more time to ponder on that. But I wanted to, these are questions I've been kind of wanting to ask folks. It's like, you know, I've almost had to kind of, you know, develop my own sense. You know, you come to grips with each movie, and you like it in different ways. I always it's even my least favorite is still a favorite. But you know that my issues with. But then you start to go with all this additional information. David, I think I'm going to pick on you first. How do you think that the Clone Wars animated series has affected your perception or your remembrance or your opinion of Revenge of the Sith?
So I actually watched Revenge of the Sith the day after watching the last episode of Clone Wars. And to kind of go to your point, it does make it harder for me to buy Hayden Christensen's turn, Hayden's Anakin's, because I think we don't get the frustration that he is feeling, that he's gone through in that last movie like we do in the Clone Wars. You know, I think I posted something or tweeted something and said, Mace Windu, and I'm not trying to pick on him, was the poster boy of the Jedi arrogance that brought them down. When he says, citizen, this is only part of a meeting, there was no gratitude whatsoever in the way that he treated Ahsoka, you know? And I think had we had seen something like that in a movie where there was these constant, I know they did the whole master thing, but if there would have been more of that, I think you would have seen, I think it would have been easier for me to buy the turn. It just seemed like it was all about one quick emotion for Anakin, where when you see it in the Clone Wars, I think you're starting, you see that there's much more to this than just saving Padme, although that's certainly up at the top.
Excellent. Excellent. Good answer. Frank, what do you think?
Okay, I agree and disagree with David there. So, yeah, the actual turn you mentioned, I mean, when the movie came out, it was really that happened that quick. But when you put all these pieces together and you see what appears to be years of the Jedi in one way or another, especially Mace, you know, I don't trust you, you know, all these kind of things, to chipping away a bit at a time. And the Jedi not knowing quite what kind of relationship he has with Palpatine at that point. And there's probably a lot of content where we don't know those little moments between Palpatine and Anakin that have been throughout his entire life since a child on Naboo in Phantom Menace. You know, this is a significant chunk of this Jedi Knight's life that this guy's been dripping poison in his ear. So also, you know, when he does turn on Mace, you know, he does, there's a moment of realization. There's that, what have I done? And maybe it's that point where it's, okay, I'm here now. There's no going back from this. In this last season where we saw Anakin, you know, attack Admiral Trench, there's been these angry, this lashing out. So that seems to be, we've been seeing that for some time bubbling under the surface. And with these relentless shipping away, you know, it's helped me accept how fast it appeared in just the movie. One of the most important things, of course, that was when Ahsoka decided to leave the Jedi Order after being accused of a crime, and all those around her, the people who are supposed to be her mentors, her protectors, her fellow Jedi, ready to throw her to the wolves. And that was someone at that point who was incredibly important in Anakin's life, and suddenly she's gone. So there's a lot of those emotional impacts that he was taken again and again. It seemed to be relentless. So it's helped me a lot. The movie Standing Alone, as it came out, it did seem a little swift, but it's helped me a great deal.
Excellent. Excellent. Good answer. What are the, just to wrap things up, David, what are some of the things you're looking forward to down the road, whether it's collecting content or whatnot? What are you kind of looking forward to?
I'm looking, there's so much good stuff, you know, coming out. You know, I'm looking forward to, you know, getting, you know, continuing doing this as a family. Star Wars is family. It doesn't mean that we're, you have to be blood, but all of us together loving, it's the same thing. Looking forward to comics being released again someday soon, and being able to pour over into those side stories that'll never see screen time, which, you know, enhance my enjoyment of it. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, my boys are starting to collect football cards, and I love watching them take care of them because it reminds me of back in the 80s and counting my baseball cards and making sure they're put in boxes the right way. So I'm enjoying that because, you know, it brings back fond memories, which is sort of that thing that I didn't expect from this. It's seeing that they have a love for something too. So I think, you know, finding more things that we can collect together, or encouraging them to find the thing that they're passionate about and doing our best to support them in that.
Excellent, excellent. Frank, what are you looking forward to?
Okay, so what's number one on my radar right now is going to be the Mandalorian top set that's coming out later this year. I did, after your prompting, intentional or not, I did pick up the Journey of the Child, which was brilliant for a little over $10, the whole set in a box. That was brilliant, especially with how everyone right now is on the Baby Yoda train. So yeah, I'm keeping an eye out for getting a pre-order in for the Mandalorian, the actual trading card set. That's going to be high on my list. Especially you were speaking to Mark recently, and he was saying about some of the people who are going to be signing to try and get some of those autographs that are going to be in the set. That's my number one right now.
Excellent, excellent. It's been an absolute pleasure to get a chance to talk to both of you, and what I love is not only the I love the positivity that you know, that you guys, you know, it just seems to follow you along and the circles you get in, like we'll see each other, you know, in the Coffee with Kenobi feeder, we'll see each other on Twitter, all that. And it's really been fun. And I think it's helped reinvigorate me into Card Trader, because now instead of just the faceless, you know, tweets that go along or, you know, like in the trade feeds, now there's some people like, oh, okay. And, you know, when you're throwing some pictures or whatnot out there, there's some reciprocation. But I also, just like I said, I think that, you know, there's all these little communities, there's pockets out there, and it's nice when you can start kind of connecting the dots. It's great when you can put a face to a name like we have tonight, and also, you know, hopefully that some people can kind of get, you know, some inspiration from us going, hey, look, you know, it's fun to be a fan, it's fun to find other fans, and there's a lot you can do just by, you know, a kind remark, a retweet, showing up in a feed, enjoying it, and passing it along. And so I just wanted to say thank you both. You've been so inspiring to me, and it's been fun. And that's why, especially during this time on Fridays when I'm putting out, you know, like, hey, I want everybody to check in, because just want to make sure everybody's okay. And then it's kind of fun to see the little gifts going back and forth. So it's been a gas, and I hope the more the merrier on that. And I would like to get you guys back on, like, you know, when we get a movie or a TV show or something like that, because this would be fun. You know, this was sort of like the origin story, but, you know, it's one of those where maybe in the follow-up conversations, then we can get into the Empire Strikes Back stuff, where it's like everybody already knows the origin stories. Now we can get into some meat, and it'd be fun to get some perspectives going there. But anyway, I'll let you guys get going tonight. And once again, I really appreciate David. David, where can people find you on the socials, by the way?
On Twitter, I'm at David_nicely, not very original. So that's where you can find me.
Excellent. And Frank, where can they find you on the socials?
So I'm pretty much primarily on Twitter, at Mr. Daft Prawn. I do have an Instagram. It's much lacking. So Twitter's the best place to find me. That's where I'll usually be hanging out.
And in the Card Trader apps, it's the same, right, Frank?
For me, it's the Daft Prawns. The Daft Prawns in the Card Trader app, yes.
And David, what's your handle in the Card Trader app?
It's DLN619, the numbers they gave me when I signed up.
Excellent, excellent. Alrighty, gentlemen. So, but anyway, I appreciate you guys being on, and it's been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Greg. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Once again, my thanks to David and Frank for being on the program tonight. It was a pleasure to get a chance to talk to him and find out a little more about him. If you have any feedback for tonight's episode, you can reach out to the program in a number of ways. You can leave a comment on the Instagram post for this episode, or you can DM me at Instagram, at Rebel Base Card. On Twitter, you can find me at the same, at Rebel Base Card. You can email the program, greg@rebelbasecard.com. You can also find me on Facebook, at Rebel Base Card. You can find the show notes for this and all episodes on the website, rebelbasecard.com. In a Star Wars Card Trader app, you can find me at CornFedTech. If you were a sketch card artist or Star Wars artist or collector, cosplayer, and want to talk about your work, your craft, your passion, please drop me a line and maybe we can work something out. I'd love to get a chance to talk to you. You can also help out the program and get the word spread out by leaving a comment and review on iTunes. Otherwise, keep those cards out of the hands of the Empire, folks. And I'll talk to you soon.
The music for this podcast is brought to you under a Creative Commons license from Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. This is Discipline off the album The Slip. This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.